Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and what so many Trump voters were largely electing him to do was to improve conditions for the American working and middle class, more jobs at better wages. One of his pet phrases is buy American, hire American. That can get lost in all the other stuff that surrounds him and that he generates. But yesterday, Trump signed two executive orders in a visit to the company Snap-on Tools in Kenosha, Wisconsin, one to make it easier to buy American, the other to hire American. They're designed specifically to make it harder for foreign companies to bid on U.S. government contracts and for American companies generally to undercut the American workforce with the H-1B visa program, visas that are supposed to be for people whose skills are not available domestically. And yet, the Washington Post reports that it's not clear how much more the president can do on hiring and buying American without an act of Congress, and he has not proposed any such bill. And oh, by the way, Donald and Ivanka Trump's clothing lines are still manufactured largely overseas by low-paid foreigners. Max Ehrenfreund is reporting on this for the Washington Post. Hi, Max. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And listeners, I'm sure we have H-1B visa holders in our audience and maybe employers who hire people with H-1B visas. You're welcome to call in and defend or criticize this corner of our economy and our immigration system, 212-433-WNYC. And I wonder if anyone who bids on federal government contracts wants to say anything about foreign competition. Your questions or comments welcome at 212-433-WNYC. WNYC 433-9692. Let's start with the contracting piece. Trump said in Kenosha that there used to be more standards or more enforcement of standards giving American companies priority in bidding for government contracts. What's the current situation and what does the executive order seek to change?
The current situation is difficult to summarize because the rules around buying American for the federal government are so complicated, and they've been instituted over decades, nearly a century of legislation and executive decisions by past administrations, past Congresses on where the federal government gets the supplies and materials and products it needs to do its business. So there are a number of laws and regulations that instruct the federal government to buy American, but there are also quite a few exemptions and exceptions and waivers that are granted to these rules, and it's just very difficult to say to what degree American firms do have an advantage in this extraordinarily complicated bidding process that is federal contracting.
Can you say what kinds of foreign companies or what kinds of contracts we're talking about most commonly? Your article cited defense contractors, for example.
Yes, I think the primary concern for President Trump is steel, and it's something that he's talked about quite a bit and memorably during the debates with Hillary Clinton. He said he wanted to rebuild the country's infrastructure using American steel. And one of the provisions of the order that he signed yesterday in Kenosha, Wisconsin, deals with the unexpected but in fact all-important question of what counts as American steel. Because, of course, you can process the steel, begin the process of producing steel in some other country and then ship a product that is partially finished to the United States and then finish it in the United States. Does that count as American steel? And so it's just one example of the kinds of complexities that become involved when the government tries to define what it means for a product to be American.
Your article quotes someone saying that allowing foreign contractors to bid on U.S. government contracts actually works to the benefit of American companies in some cases. Can you explain why that might be?
Well, yes. So this is a very interesting question, and I think there are many people in federal contracting who feel like they have a real advantage in providing services not just to the U.S. government but to foreign firms as well. I should say not just to the U.S. government but to foreign governments as well. U.S. firms obviously have a great deal of expertise, knowledge, equipment, capital in all its forms. And so when foreign governments need something done, the feeling is often they turn to U.S. Companies to get it done. And many of the exceptions to the Buy American rules that we've been discussing exist because the United States government negotiated them with foreign countries in order that these U.S. contractors would have an opportunity to compete not only here in Washington, D.C., but in foreign capitals all over the world.
That's interesting.
So,
but do you think it evens out? I mean, only multinational corporations, by definition, could bid in other countries, maybe like with a lot of other international trade deals. The big companies win, but the smaller American contractors lose.
Yes, I think that's a very interesting question. And what President Trump argued is that the U.S. is holding up its end of the bargain, but foreign countries have not allowed U.S. firms to bid on their contracts. It's very difficult to say for sure. I mean, there isn't a comprehensive source of data on contracting, public contracts, internationally.
Right.
And the Government Accountability Office studied this question and they came up with a few numbers, but it's just difficult to get an overall idea.
And there are competing best practices here, right? If I say government contracts should go to the lowest bidder to save the taxpayers money, people would nod their heads. Yeah, common sense. But if I say Americans should get priority over foreigners in government contracts, people would nod their heads too, even though that's going to tend to push up the price. So how much are these values in conflict?
I think they're absolutely in conflict. So for instance, a common rule, a common Buy American rule is that foreign companies are allowed to bid on federal contracts, but they receive a penalty. So say 20% is added to their bid, and then after that penalty is assessed, then the contract would be awarded to the lowest bidder. And so there you can see very clearly that there's a real potential for the goal of helping U.S. firms and their employees succeed is at odds with the goal of saving money for the government and being a good steward of the taxpayers' money.
So the government has to find the right balance of national priorities and interests. Your article is about these issues. It's not about Trump hypocrisy, but to the extent that you know, what does Trump say about leading by example? Because he certainly didn't mention his and his daughter's outsourcing of their clothing lines to factories in Vietnam and Bangladesh and other places, or his hiring of a lot of guest workers at Mar-a-Lago. Does he even bother to defend these things or just say he won the election so nobody cares, like with his tax returns?
It's an interesting question. And in fact, there was a testy exchange in a briefing that was given to reporters at the White House on Monday. And there were a couple of senior administration officials there speaking anonymously about the executive order that Trump was preparing to sign. And they were asked about this issue, what about Trump's hypocrisy on the question of hiring American? And the response was basically, well, when Trump was a businessman, he did what's best for his businesses. And now that he's the president, he's going to do what's best for the country. Next question, please. Which I don't think really addresses the question that you're raising, which is, what about the idea of leading by example and being a moral exemplar and embodying the ideals that you choose to preach? Not just because it's not just a matter of the president advocating specific policies and getting things done in a concrete sense. The president also has a bully pulpit and a great deal of soft power that he or potentially she in the future could use to try to influence the actions of people in this country and the direction of the economy overall.
Max Ehrenfreud, remembering that a woman could potentially be president in the United States someday. Max Ehrenfreud reporting on the two Buy American, Hire American executive orders that Donald Trump signed yesterday for the Washington Post. We'll get to some of your phone calls in a minute. Let's go on to the other executive order on H-1B visas. For the uninitiated, what's the issue here?
Yes, the H-1B visa is a program for foreigners who want to come to the United States and work for a temporary period of time. The program is designed for foreigners who have a high degree of skill. But the concern is that many of these H-1B visas are granted to people from other countries who perhaps do not have a great degree of knowledge or expertise and are simply being used by American firms to reduce the wages that they pay and to undermine Americans who otherwise might be doing the same work. And I would add, I might have misspoken a minute ago. Uh-huh. There is only one executive order. It addresses both Buy American, that is federal contracting, which we were just discussing, and this issue of hiring American, which relates to the guest worker
program. It's one unified. So that was me misspeaking. I did introduce it that way, mistakenly, so I apologize. And on the H-1Bs, you wrote that one avenue for reform, and we should say that you don't have to be a right-wing populist or nativist to think this is an issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely not. And I would say the same thing about federal contracting. I mean, this is really an executive order from the White House that I think there's a great deal of public support for in both parties. And it's been such a controversial administration so far. I mean, everything Trump does and says affects everything else that he does and says, and that it tinges people's perception of him. But these are really, you know, I think issues that certainly there's disagreement, but a great deal of interest in both parties.
So you wrote that one avenue for reform could be adjusting the wage scale to more accurately reflect prevailing salaries in the tech industry so they don't just bring people in from India in particular and other countries to a lesser degree to undercut wages. Does the government have a role in setting wages for H-1B visa holders in tech?
Well, that is a philosophical question on one level, but in fact, yes. The government does have the responsibility to decide the wages that these visa holders should be paid. And the Trump administration seems to feel that they might be able to change that scale, that schedule of wages. And if they do, it might be more difficult for companies to bring in workers and then pay them less than they would otherwise be paying Americans. But I think, you know, a real question is how much the president can accomplish without Congress's cooperation on this issue. He can only make minor changes, and we're just not really sure where the president's legal authority begins and ends in this area.
Which raises another question about, if not Trump hypocrisy, Trump being a showman rather than a substantive change agent. You did quote an expert in your article who said Trump could make much more meaningful changes on both buying American and hiring American with Congress, but he's not proposing any bills to that effect so far. Why not?
Well, that is an excellent point, and the administration's relationship with Congress has not been a positive one, despite the fact that Republicans control both the White House and the Congress, and the president is ostensibly the leader of the Republican Party. He hasn't been able to get Republicans to unite around major issues, and you know, Congress has its hands full already. There's concern about the fact that Republicans failed to undo President Obama's changes to the healthcare system, also known as Obamacare. They are hoping to overhaul the tax code, and they're staring at the possibility of a government shutdown in just 10 days. So there's really a lot going on in Congress, and you know, it's just a matter of fact that Republicans haven't been able to unite, move legislation, get things done. And so this set of issues around buying American and hiring American seems pretty far down a long to-do list for lawmakers at the moment.
Jeepti in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I recently wanted to talk about my personal experience. I came here as a student for my master's in finance, and I had an undergraduate degree in chemical engineering back from India. As a part of the degree, you know, going to school here, you get something called an OPT period where, you know, you get to be as a on a student visa, an F1 visa, and you get to work. As I was on that OPT period, I definitely think that, you know, there I was working for half the price that anybody else would be working. I was working for a mere $35,000 for a job that would easily fetch at least $70,000. So is there some kind of fundamental issue with the H-1 program? I think there is, and I think that not only affects Americans, I think it affects even the people who have come here who have paid enormous amounts to get those master's degrees and, you know.
Yes.
So
Do you feel that it cuts both ways for you? And we have a pretty noisy line, so I'm going to keep this short. But, Jeepti, do you feel that it cuts both ways for you, that on the one hand, your wages, because you're an H-1B visa holder, are being artificially depressed, so you're a victim. But on the other hand, if they weren't allowed to do that, then they might hire somebody who was born here and you might not even have this opportunity.
That's right. You're completely right about that, that there is that situation where they would hire somebody else. But I think that, I mean, the experience that I bring as a chemical engineer and a finance person is going to be very different from a lot of people who don't have that choice too. So I don't think all H-1 workers are being exploited, but at the same time, is there exploitation happening that's affecting everybody? Yes, I think that's the answer there.
Jeepti, thank you so much for your call. Call us again. So, Max, does the executive order in fact raise the wage levels for H-1B visa holders in technology?
No, it does not. The order calls for a review by federal agencies, and they are supposed to report to the president on avenues they might take to reform the program, but no specific reforms are proposed. There are just a few that have been discussed. That's one that's on the table, but no action is being taken at this time on that question, and it is a very interesting one.
So for all the hoopla in Kenosha yesterday, this executive order is basically to appoint a commission to look into it?
Yeah, you're right about that. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. I mean, the issue here is that Trump has to move slowly and cautiously because he's not moving with Congress's approval or cooperation here. He's acting on his own authority as president, which could be limited. And so he does have to, you know, talk to the lawyers and figure out what he can do and what he can't do. And that process will take some time. And the end results might be somewhat disappointing for those who are hoping for a wholesale reform of the H-1B visa and other guest worker programs.
Vicky in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, this is such a great show. Thank you for it.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that in the late 90s and at the turn of the millennium, I was working in a small advertising boutique that specifically was hiring British people on the H-1B visa. And they were paying them a lot less than they would pay people who had equivalent skills here in the States. And then once they were really trained, they would keep them in with the golden handcuffs. But in any case, our citizens were excluded from jobs that they could do. And I felt that that was unfair. That's my only comment.
Thank you very much. Well, which raises another question. And that is, if we think of the H-1B visas, which are supposed to be for people with particular skills that are not as widely available as the market demands in the United States, we do tend to think of workers in the STEM fields, in the high-tech fields. But people do get them in advertising, like the caller says, and in other, you know, areas where you probably don't actually need to hire somebody from the UK or something to find a qualified person, right? And if so, how does that happen?
Of course, President Trump himself, when he was in business, famously used the H-1B program to bring over models from overseas. And we don't often hear
anyone
about
in particular.
The United States. It is reported that his wife, Melania Trump, did come to the United States on an H-1B visa, just as an example. But of course, you know, there's no discussion of a shortage of workers in modeling in the United States, and so yes, there is a question as to what these visas are being used for and whether they address a real need in the labor force here in the United States. And, you know, I think it's worth having a debate about what the country needs and how best to acquire those skills, whether from the United States here at home or from around the world.
Before you go, let me just touch on one or two other things real quick, because I see that you've been writing, and for those of you who don't know Max Ehrenfreund's byline in The Washington Post, he writes a lot of economic stories. And so, like, you have one the other day called Trump Wants to Give a Big Tax Cut to the Rich. Here's what his supporters want. What divide were you framing there?
Yes, there's just very little appetite, according to recent polls, among the American people, including Republicans, for a major reduction in federal taxes. And it's a real contrast with, I would say, the early 1980s when President Reagan had just been elected and he had promised to reduce taxes. Of course, President Trump, similar in some ways, won in a landslide, was at least electorally promised to reduce taxes. And yet it doesn't really seem like this is an issue that is animating his base. A lot of Republicans feel that the amount of taxes that they pay is approximately fair. And there's only a minority, only about a third of Republicans say they're really bothered by the amount of taxes that they have to pay. Instead, a greater priority for Republicans and especially Democrats is they feel that the wealthy and corporations are not paying enough. And those are groups that would benefit enormously. They would save enormously on their taxes and pay far less if President Trump and Republicans in Congress pass the bills that they are considering currently.
And so as we run out of time, you also covered Trump's recent flips on China being a currency manipulator and apparently being for the Export-Import Bank when he used to take the nationalist position opposed, now saying nice things about Janet Yellen. I heard he's planning now only to tweak NAFTA, not seriously undo it. So if I have all those things right, by Steve Bannon standards, let's say, what would Trump's economic nationalism report card look like today?
Well, I think it's a poor report card, but it does – everything you've just said emphasizes the importance of this Buy American, Hire American executive order that he signed yesterday, because with this order, he really is moving – I mean, despite all of the shortcomings and questions and uncertainties that are still in the air around this order, he's moving clearly in the direction of a more nationalist approach to federal contracting and immigration policy. And I think that's very encouraging for his diehard nationalist supporters, as you said.
Max Ehrenfreud, Washington Post correspondent, thank you so much.
Thank you.